This week on RSBNB Update, we deal the sentence on elite dungeon abusers, detail RuneScape's wishes, and share our biggest wishes of all. Then we have a look at Reiniger's notes and preview the Battle of the Monolith. This is RSBNB Update, episode 830, recorded Thursday, May 20th, 2021. My Way with My Wishes. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week is a big week news-wise. We, of course, have news on the wishes and the Elite Dungeon bugs, but, you know, there's going to be so much more on that, right, Tanis?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Lots to come.
Yeah. And we're going to have some fun discussions on that and a little bit later in the podcast. Sirion and Questcaping will be joining us to talk about the big reveal about the next chapter of the Elder God Wars, which is going to be a very, very fun discussion. But if you're joining us for the first time, this is RSBNB Update. We are the longest-running RuneScape podcast. You can, of course, find us in Friends Chat, Bits Bytes. I am Shane12088, and he is Tanis79. And if you want to follow along with the show notes, you can get those at update.rsbnb.com. And, you know, this week is a bit of a quiet week game update-wise. We're going to actually start with patch notes, and then we're going to move into the Q&A that happened this week. Is that all right with you?
Hey, that sounds okay. Good.
So starting off, an issue has been fixed with the Unlocking Wyco 2 achievement where the Hunter and the Hanto outfits were being marked as completed when they were not for those working through the arc.
Oh, so sorry.
Yeah.
So salty.
Right. I'm honestly not sure how to feel about that content all these years later.
Yeah, well, that's a discussion for another day.
Yeah, let's save it for another day. Hey, which, of course, in this day and age means potentially a monthly bet. But continuing on, the Lumberge Skilling Path achievement, A Labor of Loaf, can once again be completed. Since the Cockroach Soul can now be added to the Slayer Codex, you'll need to have one for the To Be a Master achievement. So they're adding more of these things in, so you're going to have to go find one of these, probably. I don't know where you'd find this. Stronghold of Player Security, I bet, right?
That's about the only place I could think of.
Yeah. All right. Animation-wise, fixed a minor animation issue when using a Slayer dummy, which a lot of us have been doing during Double XP.
I was going to say, how have you noticed that, Shane?
Yeah.
How was that fixed for you?
Yeah, it's becoming my new favorite Slayer training method when available. Weapons will no longer appear upside down on the customization interface while previewing the twisted jester walk animation. Fixed an animation issue with one of the King Black Dragon heads. And then moving on to other fixes, your ability cooldowns will now be reset after clicking out of the prayer mode swap confirmation screen at the Altar of War. I didn't know that you could change prayer modes there.
Yeah,
I was not aware of that.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got everything, right? Like, it's the sundae with the chocolate syrup and the, like, you name it, it's there.
Yeah, and you know, we had those discussions when it came out if it was too good. And effectively, we came to the conclusion that lowering barrier to entry was indeed a good thing.
I think we came to the conclusion that nothing can ever be too good.
Yeah, especially for the PVM crowd. Using the Needle Strike ability no longer results in increased damage upon changing primary target. That's a bit of an obscure one. Wondering how many people knew about that and how much damage we were talking about with this one. Because you get these kind of things and you're wondering, is this, you know, like a 5% change or 50% change kind of thing? Cows, bulls, and chinchampas on the player-owned farm will now no longer appear without color if textures are disabled.
Cows what, Shane?
Cows, bulls, and chinchampas.
Cows what?
Cows, bulls, and chinchampas. What did I say?
What?
Cows, bulls, and chinchampas on
the
playground farm. Oh,
bulls. Like
what did you think?
Bowl.
Like a fish bowl?
No, I'm messing with you, Shane.
Oh, okay, fair enough. I thought maybe I said something I wasn't supposed to say there.
It was that long. I thought that was a long A there, Shane. But I forgot you're just Canadian.
A long A in chinchampa?
No. Bowls. Kind of sound like a balls.
Okay, fair enough. The Calgarian demon's Critical scrolls will now hunt for nearby players around the familiar, rather than only in the southwest corner of its footprint.
Hey, there you go. Next time you get the Calgarian task.
Yeah, lots of people forget that you can actually use that one as one of the binding contract ancient summoning familiars.
That's right.
Remember we had that whole discussion last year about whether or not that should be the next expansion and the next kind of thing that summoning would become?
Yeah, the evolution of summoning.
Yeah, rather than just the pouch-making skill. Fixed an issue where the Saren Godbow's special attack debuff was cleared too quickly. That's good. Premium beards now work correctly.
What? How does a beard not work?
I don't know.
Hey, when Therion gets here, ask him what makes a beard not work. Like, that beard is just not working for you. Like, what's the criteria for a beard to not work?
You know he doesn't have one, right? Even though it seems like he should have one.
I know, but it seems like he would be a good judge of beards.
Right? Why do we think that? I don't know. Oh, boy. Where were we? Disabling textures will no longer cause the blue and purple toadstools in the Lost Grove to display incorrectly. Players wearing the Master Farmer outfit will now receive a discount from Horatio when asking him to guard their vines. The quest overview screen for Morning's End Part 2 now points to the correct start point.
That's good.
Missing Slayer Masters have been added to the Slayer Holiday Portal. This is in Lumbridge. Yeah. This is in Lumbridge right now, right? Or is this something else we're talking about? Because I thought all that stuff in Lumbridge was shut down. I'm going to go check that out because I want to know about this. Next up, dragging the Mighty Slayer Helmet F into the worn equipment slot will now keep it equipped instead of opening the teleport option windows. Players no longer become cursed after upgrading their membership and logging into RuneScape, which means, according to Jagex, new players will no longer get the Sap or Leech curses currently affecting you reduce your stats a little message on their second login if it's a member's world. That's really obscure.
You think it's a PvP thing? Like in the wilderness or something?
But what would that have to do with somebody who upgrades to a member from being non-member?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's really, really weird.
That's weird.
A particular mining rock in the Three's Company saga no longer clips into the scenery. We're all very glad that that's been adjusted. It was last year, or maybe in 2019, that I finally broke down and did the Dungeoneering task sets. And
I hope you did that before you got 120.
Yes, I did. I did. Okay. Remember, I'm not 120 Dungeoneering currently.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah.
But those sagas have not aged well because they are pre-EOC content.
They're bad. I did them post-EOC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just
But they're
feels...
charming, right? They kind of have their own little charm about them.
I guess.
Yeah.
I guess. The spoiler in the final cutscene of the Ritual Majorat no longer slides into view. So I'm thinking of two potential things for this. I don't remember which one is exactly final on this, but there's two options that I'm thinking this could be. One could be Ecrisse, because remember there's that bit in this quest where Ecrisse jumps in front of the dart or whatever it is that Sisuke fires and winds up turning him into Abaro's brother.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of Linza there for a moment. And the other one is that the Dragonkin, when they're burning down Draenor, could ultimately just be sliding into view. So that's the two things that I'm thinking that could be referring to on this. And by final, if it truly does mean final, that's then the Dragonkin instance.
Yeah, that's a hell of a one to get bugged.
Yeah. Players will now require 2 free backpack slots to collect captured animals from box traps due to an error where animals would be dropped as items if the backpack was full. Okay. So, I mean, why not just fix it so that they can go into the empty slot?
Yeah, I don't.
That's a little bit confusing. Continuing on, users can no longer interact with the elemental balance in the player-owned house if they're using Revolution Combat Mode.
What? What is the elemental balance? Is that for the game room?
I think that's for the game room.
Digging deep, going, shoo.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what that would be, because it's... What does that thing do, even? Each player has a turn at turning the spear to white, which means it's balanced with all the elements. And then you have to fire your spells at it. I guess if you were just using Revolution, then you'd be firing abilities at it. Were people maybe using this as a way to charge adrenaline?
I don't know. Maybe? I don't know. It seems like, why would you do that, though, if war's retreat?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Weird one. The death penalty modifier is now shown as expected on the end screen after completing a Daemonheim dungeon. Dwarven chain axe abilities now work when wearing full nature's sentinel outfit configured to consume logs. Good. Mm-hmm. Corrected a situation which could lead to players becoming stuck in the gelatinous abomination cave in the Burthorpe tutorial. Yeah, you don't want to get stuck in an early tutorial.
Yeah. That...
Nope, no good.
No,
and...
Bueno.
Fixed an issue that prevented players with both the smelting gauntlets and a ring of forging equipped from smelting 60 iron bars at once.
What?
Right?
You can't smelt 60 bars anymore?
Well, you can. That's what the smelting gauntlets enable, but the ring of forging is the one that allows you to get the allows you to make it so that your iron bars or your iron ore doesn't combust and you smith efficiently.
Uh-huh.
Because remember, previously it was 2.
Yeah.
This brings it down to 1. So if you combined that ring of forging with the smelting gauntlet so that you smith 60 at once, previously this wouldn't work. And that's been fixed.
Oh, okay. I guess someone has to make iron bars.
Right? And that's the thing. I mean, we forget about this, but that's a very, very, very useful method of smithing training in terms of, you know, leveling up, and especially for Iron Man characters as well.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a good, it's a good quest reward for a fairly early quest, isn't it? I mean, moderate, yeah. medium, so.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I remember doing it early
Family
on.
Family Crest, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm. You get the blue, right, silver, and all that.
Yeah. Sign of the Porter 7 icon will no longer be removed from the buff bar upon relogging. And last one, using soils from archaeology on one another no longer opens a Herblore UI.
Okay.
I don't know why that would happen, but there you have it. And that's the patch notes for the week.
All right.
Nice little patch notes. Very traditional this week, I felt. People probably had a keen eye as to, you know, wondering where the heck the ninja strikes have been. Well, we got an answer to that in the live stream this week because Mod Kalaya was on board for this live stream that was talking about wishes and further changes made to RuneScape Mobile. And this was initially going to be a Leeds Q&A, but apparently some members of the Leeds were unavailable to attend. So as a result, they decided to make it exclusively about the wishes and where they were at today on the progress of that. But they also did address a number of fun little tidbits that the community has been wanting to be fixed for a long, long time here, and they wanted to hear about this. So let's just dive in right here. Let's just dive in and
dive right into it.
And let's just throw off the shackles that there's going to be any conception here that things are going to be equitable with this. And talking about the Elite Dungeons fix that came out a number of weeks ago in terms of the number of people that were banned, we got some information on this, and Mod Hooley did his best with this. He went through this segment at warp speed. I don't know if you watched this part.
Yeah.
You saw how quick he was going, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I've tried to get through a segment that fast before.
It was a blip on in the stream. And I guess in that regard it was effective. Because I didn't give it a whole lot of thought at the time.
Yeah. I caught that right away and I thought, okay, that's a useful technique. Let's see what the ramifications are of this going on. But what we took away from this was that abuse numbers for the bug were in the hundreds and not thousands, as many people thought it would be. There was a minimal impact on the economy. They made a few erroneous bans that were being fixed when the stream went out. They should be fixed by the time everyone's hearing this. And they handed out a mix of temporary and permanent bans. Now, we were here on the record very famously of saying this: if you do the time, you do the crime. In that, my personal sense on this is that if you just ran across this bug randomly, or you were with a group that did it and it wasn't on your own volition to make this happen, then that should be a temporary ban after hearing about it. Like, if you just heard about it, went through an elite dungeon, see if it was true, yes, temporary ban. But I think for anybody who farmed this out and, you know, actually was able to make a good amount of money off it, that should be a permanent ban. Now, there was a discussion here that many people were talking about, and this is at the point where everybody just needs to take a step back from this, I feel, and realize that we don't exactly know the exact number of people that were permanently banned. We only have hearsay from the very loudest members of the community who are posting it on Twitter, social media, and Reddit and whatnot, who are saying that, you know, they did this X amount of times and they only got temporary banned. We only have that as a certain view on what's happening with this. Now, with that in mind, I think we all just need to take a step back and realize that the amount of people who are talking about this is not necessarily going to be a representative sample. So based on this and based on what's been going around in the community, the general sense is that permanent bans were only handed out to people who did real-world trading after abusing this bug for the gold. And those who got temporary bans was anybody who just abused the bug, you know, numerous times for their own personal benefit. Another caveat is we don't know what kind of wealth removal was done, if anything, on this. So there's lots of questions floating about. And the general sentiment of the community is that Jagex wasn't harsh enough, believe it or not. But as I said, you're not getting a representative sample here because you're not hearing from everybody who is banned. The people who are more likely to talk about it and who manufactured this and used it as a money-making method are the ones who are more likely going to be to post it. Because like we talked about, anytime you have a bug like this come up, people do it for fun. Because they think, it's just a game, we'll do it. Then we'll go out and we'll post about it, right? And if those people are the ones getting temporary banned, that signal is being amplified, and that's what's going forward on it. So my message to everybody out there is that, anybody who abused this knowingly, I think, should be permanently banned. But because we don't have exact numbers on who this was, we need to take what we hear with a grain of salt, and we need to see if those who are temporarily banned had any wealth removal done when they come back. Your thoughts?
It almost sounds like you're saying you can't trust what a cheater says. I mean, especially on the internet. I don't know.
That's effectively what it boils down to.
I think that you're right. The people that are talking about it are making a spectacle for their own purposes and their own agendas, whatever those may be. Now, I'm not so down on the temporary bans. I don't know how they work. I would like to think that they can vary in time depending on the degree of your abuse.
Now, the general sense of what we heard is that it's 2 weeks.
Yeah, I get that. Of course, you know, banning people that would real-world trade permanently, that's a given. But, I could see, some of the worst cases that were just players, you know, that wanted to run around with, I don't know, whatever, some dyed site or whatever is flossing nowadays, right? I could see that be you still get a ban, but maybe it's a 3-month ban or something like that.
Right. That's a very, very long time in the span of an MMO.
Well, look at what just happened when people got logged out for 3 months. I mean, so it's severe, but it's not saying screw you. We'll never take your money again.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think just looking at this thing from the whole macro perspective on this is that if they wanted to make a statement with this in terms of, effectively wholeheartedly saying that any kind of bug abuse like this going forward is not going to be acceptable, the way to do that would have been to come out with an exact number of people who are permanently banned on this and how much wealth was taken out of the game. And with that, you don't need to mention the number of people who are temporarily banned. You just need to say that this is the bug and this many people were permanently banned. And in a way, do you get where I'm going with this? This is, in a way, doing more with less than outright, you know, just banning everybody if that's the tack they want to take internally.
Yeah, I think what they're probably concerned about, though, is, you know, having the armchair quarterbacks questioning, well, we know this person did it because there's public evidence or whatever, and then start questioning decisions made. Start comparing numbers, and it just opening up a bigger mess for them.
Right, and that's another plus to the way that this has been handled, is that the way that they have been doing this, they're not opening themselves up to that that wider wrath, let's just say. And this is one thing I think that lots of people in the community forget, and our podcast listeners are susceptible to this too. As a podcast listener to a game called RuneScape, and if you also are on RuneScape social media, and if you're on the RuneScape subreddit, you're a part of a very, very, very tiny piece of the game community who cares about this kind of thing. I can guarantee you, if you would just ask one normal person that you would meet in your day-to-day gameplay who isn't on those communities, they wouldn't care about this whatsoever.
Yeah, I think the reason it blew up the way it blew up, when it blew up, had a lot of extenuating circumstances other than just being a bug and a money exploit, right? We've had plenty of those in the past. It's almost always PayRAM.
Yeah.
And but nothing.
And it almost
out of
always comes from one specific community too.
Yeah. So I think it was the hype, it was what was surrounding it that made it so much different this time.
Right.
You know, it was all this stuff that was going on social media and, you know, and videos and whatnot. And that it just, I think that's what made the difference.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you get, let's just say, I don't know what the average subscriber base is for a RuneScape YouTuber, a Twitch streamer. But let's just say the average was 5,000. And let's just say a number of, let's just say, 7 people on social media say that they only got temporary banned for abusing this bug willy-nilly. And then of that community of, you know, people who have, you know, those 5,000 or so subscribers on either Twitch or YouTube, let's say a quarter of them decide to, you know, retweet or amplify the signal of those 7 people, there you go. That's how you wind up with this being a bigger deal than it is, because it's those, it's in effect the people who are taking part in that community dialogue who are sending that. They're the ones who are effectively setting this discussion up going forward.
Did you just describe a political base?
I did. I think I did.
I think you did.
And, you know, it's the same thing, like you say, whether it be a political party or the followers of certain communities, it goes from one to the next, and then it balloons outward from that. And because of people seeing the reaction within those own sub-communities, makes it seem bigger than it actually is. When, in reality, we probably don't have much knowledge of how many people were temporarily banned, how many people were permanently banned. And like I said, if they wanted to make a statement, they could have said that on the live stream this week.
Yeah, well, the good thing is we are talking about lower numbers. If they're saying hundreds, you know, that's a good thing. Because even for the number of people that may, you know, have an outsized reach, that's still a handful compared to hundreds, you know what I mean? So
right.
It does give there's a lot of gray there, but this is one of those things where I don't think we need to know the answers necessarily to it. You know, it is kind of what it is.
Yeah.
And we know and like why. I said, and we know it is what it is.
Yeah. And like I said, we won't know if there has been wealth removal on the temp ban people until they get unbanned. So if these people get banned for 2 weeks and they have all the wealth they earned from doing this removed, they lost that amount of wealth and they lost that much time in the game where they could have been doing things to make money on that front. So in effect, they lose double the amount.
See, right now I'm going to advocate that we need to take this out of the real world, get it out of the real world, let's put it in the game world, and let's introduce civil asset forfeiture for bug abuse. If you're caught committing bug abuse, we will take all of your shit, no matter what, how, whatever. Your bank is gone, son.
Remember when Osborn wanted to do bank bidders?
Yeah, right? And then we'll bid on it. It's cold. You want to do some wealth removal? You want to do some punishment? There you go. We'll have fines. You don't have it? That's okay. We accept buy bonds. That's cool.
No, but in all seriousness, just to sum this up, you know, I personally think anybody who actually abused this on their own accord should be permanently banned. That's my personal opinion on it. But when it comes to the way this was handled, you know, you can make an argument that the fact that it was only hundreds and not thousands and there was minimal impact on the economy, it doesn't need to be a huge ban hammer type instance. And in such instead, you go with temporary ban plus wealth removal. That's perhaps even worse than a permanent ban because, like I said, they're losing what they earned abusing the bug and they're losing that time when they could have been PVMing and, you know, making whatever kind of money they do.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, take it away.
So,
I mean, Axis.
Right, and whichever way you slice it, something was done, and just because it was done this way this time, if there's ever a next time, that doesn't necessarily mean that the same thing's going to happen, I feel.
Well, there will be a next time, and the reason I know that was because there was a previous time. I don't know... that the scale this time was so much more dramatic than what the scale was.
It was made out bigger than it actually was.
Right. So.
And I think we know why that was the case.
I think we know why.
It falls back to those same communities.
Yeah.
And we talked about that when this whole thing started to pop off that, you know, you ask yourself, do you really need to make a video about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you were out to make a statement, then that would make a really loud one. But, you know, I also think a temporary ban is fine. I think in that circumstance, it's okay. Because if you look at it this way, not only do you lose out on the game, but, I mean, some people may actually be losing out on the real world. Like, money.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
All right. I think that's enough on that. A couple other things they addressed quickly. Sophonim Slayer, dungeon bugs, including the ability to do whatever's called the feather trick. They're looking at resolving that, and they're actually looking at potential changes to make the achievement involved with that more achievable. I don't know what that's about, something to do with the achievements down there.
Well, everything was all fine and dandy until Shane starts doing Slayer. Now, all of a sudden, there's an issue down in Sophonim. No, I don't know what this is either. Yeah. I'm like, but it sounded like maybe people that were farming, like, are they getting in the way of the people that are trying to do Slayer? It sounded like that was kind of like one of the fixes.
The sounds of it, based on what I read into this, sounds like there was a way that you could make your feathers last longer than they're supposed to. The feathers of bad.
Oh, okay.
And then there's some achievement as well in the dungeon that wasn't working correctly and was being boosted. I'm not entirely sure on what that is. But, I mean, hey, if we don't know about it up here, that's, once again, a pretty obscure thing.
Oh, that makes sense. So if you're farming, you're doing the failure. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Client fixes, in general, texture issues. It fixes in the work for this, and whenever the next engine update is ready, that will ship. And for client crashes, they were working on this beforehand. The login lockout caused a loss of momentum, and they say if they're experiencing any client crashes, especially reproducible ones, head on over to the engine feedback channel in the official Discord to describe your issues, because they actually have a couple of the engine devs in there, and that's actually a really fun channel to watch. And that's where I found out that we had now had multi-threaded rendering on Mac OS. So
yeah, go Mac, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Apparently, the feathers had to do with scorpions.
Yeah, I remember him saying that. But why would you do scorpion? Like, why farm scorpions?
I don't know. I think it's something to do with the achievement, but I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Following from that discussion on RuneScape Mobile, before launch, they aim to polish the Dave and Dale tutorial a little bit more. They highlighted the HUD changes that went live about a couple of weeks ago with the new icons and buttons, and they addressed a point of concern that lots of people have talked about, in particular with the minimap, that the minimap on mobile will be moved back to where it was in time for launch. And with this, the impact to existing players was pretty big, even though, and they said, and this is what we said on the show when we talked about this, is that it was likely going to be an improvement for new players. And this is they talk about the challenge they face with this, because they're going to have a bunch of active players playing mobile when it launches, but there's also going to be a whole load of new people coming in, and they want them to have a comfortable experience. And as we also predicted, the justification for this was to have the navigation element near the right-hand thumb. And by moving the minimap lower, you prevent that from happening. You make it easier to interact with the right-hand thumb up top with the inventory and backpack and the like. And it was also, of course, impacting combat and the action bar, which we touched on as well.
I wonder if this is me, or if this screams like I haven't played this a lot, because I have never used my minimap to navigate on mobile. It's all I use to navigate on desktop.
Interesting.
But I've never used it on mobile to navigate. And I don't know. Is that common? Like, do you use it? Cause
yeah, I use the minimap on mobile.
Okay, because I don't know.
I also use the Lodestone interface quite frequently, and that's nice to have at the top right again.
Yeah, I really don't like it. I really don't like it down there.
Right.
And it does, I mean, and since, I don't know, I didn't use it to navigate, so it was just
can hide it away if you don't want it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess there's that.
Yeah. And they say, post-launch, the mobile client will continue to be improved the same way the desktop client is to be continually improved. And, that's good. We anticipated that. And as for pre-registration, the first two tiers have been unlocked. Tier 3 is very close. And with that, Tier 4 and 5 might be just right around the corner, they say. But, of course, we don't have any metrics for that, and they didn't share any about how many people pre-registering that actually is.
Yeah, it's like, we're not to 3, but 4 and 5 might be right around the corner. Like, yeah, it might be.
Right?
Yeah.
So just a reminder for everybody what this is. You just go to the main RuneScape page and click on mobile, or you can just click in the link in the show notes. I'll put a link into this. Just click the pre-register on Google Play or pre-order on the App Store, and it will automatically appear on launch day. Tier 1 is the soft punk hairstyle. Tier 2 is the Magic Leap Teleport device. Tier 3 is the Crux Akal Sword. Tier 4 is Scales the Animated Pet. Tier 5 is the Crux Akal Armor. And Tier 6 is a 7-day 50% XP boost for all once this launches. In June, presumably. But, you know, they're still being coy about what the release date's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, let's get on to what everybody has wanted to talk about, the wishes.
Wishes.
These actually look really good, I will say.
This is the first week that I've been a little more comfortable with the wishes. Mainly because they have, like, a shape, right?
Right.
They have, like, something about that. But also, I started thinking about, on the stream, you know, what we have missed out from the ninjas, what we've missed out in the engine fixes. I'm like, you know what? That, I guess that affected me too.
Yeah.
You know, like, it affected everybody. So, okay, that's cool that, you know, we are being rewarded. And what was nice is the players as a community said, hey, we want you to hold on. Hey, we want to make this delay. And Jagex still tried to make it right. I think it's really cool. And it, for the first time, I'm like, okay, maybe I'm cool with these wishes. And they didn't end up being like, they weren't way too good and they weren't total trash. You could tell that they put a lot of work into them.
Yeah. Wishes will now be known as the Guardian's Gift. And like you said, we missed out on Ninja Strikes because of this, because the Ninja team had been working on Awesome April, the post-lockout bundle that the locked out people got, and then the wishes following that.
Yep.
And they say, by and large part, these were driven by player suggestions on what they feel they might have missed out on. And as a result of this, everyone gets one wish. Locked out players get 3, and those who were severely impacted will get 4. And this translates into having 100% charge on the Guardian's Gift for those who are locked, or for everyone, 300% for those who are locked out, and 400% for those who were severely impacted. And all of them except one will be available to Iron Man characters. And they did this because the Iron Man with the lockout who were affected by it really didn't get much out of the first gift, so they wanted to make right on that, so take that into consideration.
Yeah, these are very Iron Man friendly, very Iron Man centric, I think, even for a few of them.
Yeah, I agree. Let's go through some of these, but there is a caveat here. They launch on Monday, May 24th. You have to log in before August 24th to pick up the item that grants them, and then after that you can keep the item, destroy it, do whatever you want, retrieve it from Diango, and use it as you see fit. But your account has to have been created before April 5th to have access to these wishes.
Yep.
So there will be no creating an account this weekend and hoping you get this on Monday. Just FYI.
No. You need to have been here for the lockout.
And, you know, the reason they were delayed, because remember, we were supposed to get them at the end of last month, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, they said initially there's going to be a wish of time, a wish of value, and a wish of experience, and then you would have been locked into choosing that one specific path. And it was the time that they took to rework this that pushed us back another 2 weeks on this matter.
Yeah, but if this is what they were able to do in 2 weeks, I don't think the players will mind.
No, exactly.
They got it right. The charging system that's really smart. I really like that. Being able to mix and match, that's really smart. I really like that.
And it's also very nice UI as well.
What? Did you say something?
Yeah, I did.
Did you say something about RuneScape and a nice UI?
Yeah, I did.
Wait. Now you're going to have to run that by Sirion again when he shows up. I don't know. Will it pass his test?
Okay, so starting with the Inventor's Wish, this one is by far the most expensive. It will cost 20% each time you activate it, and with 100% charge, you can use it 5 times. You get a choice of a weapon, tool, or armor gizmo, and if you have Ancient Invention unlocked, you'll get an ancient gizmo of that. And then following from that, you're able to fill the gizmo up with any material that you have unlocked. So what this means is that you can have a role at getting one of the best-in-slot perks for the game for absolutely free. The one they demoed on stream was Biting 4 with 8 noxious components.
And even if you didn't get it, what are you going to do? Get Biting 3? Ooh, right? Baller. You know, like, I think this one is so good. I never saw this one coming either. And it is... So this is like what I love about this is it would be really expensive. If you had to go out and buy it, like it would be really, really expensive. But they're not giving you the money, right?
Yeah. Apparently noxious components are about 8 mil each.
Yeah. But by getting the actual like material and getting the chance at the perk, I don't know. I think that's a good way to do something that's that valuable, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they didn't give us the money. They didn't just, you know,
give the gizmos away. And remember, gizmos and whatnot were one of the things that lots of people lost when they were doing this if they weren't able to restore it, right?
Right.
And apparently Aftercare did a good job on restoring these, so there's that. Just, you know, focusing on the best in slot side, following from this, I had a discussion with David on this, and you know, if you wanted to do something with Ilya Zhonkin components which normally come from the Dragon Rider Lance, I believe those are about 10 mil each, and he figures that for each roll that you wanted to make, if you wanted to make an Aftershock 4 Equilibrium 2, it'd take about 60 mil or 6 Ilya Zhonkin components and 3 Time Warden components.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay. Another thing you could do is 7 noxious components and 2 Third Age for Biting 4 and a Demon Slayer or Dragonfire. So it's all dependent based upon what you fight. So it all sums up to be a situation that is winding up to be worth more than 50 million on each roll, and you could do this upwards of 5 times. So
because yep, this one's 20%.
Yeah, so if you are in that position where you're wanting to augment your armor or your weapons, but you don't want to spend the huge amount of money out there to get these perks, this is your opportunity to do it. You know, when I did mine for Combat Week, when that came in and I got Precise 6 Equilibrium 4, I forget what the exact... components I used in that were, but you know it was relatively cheap compared to what we're talking about here. But still, I mean, for somebody who wants to get into this and needs that perk on RS for their weapon, you know, if you're talking about spending, you know, 10-12 mil to get this perk and you can get it for free, why not?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm definitely going to be using a couple of these on the Inventor's Wish. Or
the Inventor's whatever. Wish, as it's called. And, of course, you'll want to unlock Ancient Invention before this if you are able to, which means that whenever you're going out there to do that, you have until August to unlock it, so just keep that in mind. And I mean, hey, if even if you just want a precise six, historic components are relatively easy to get compared to some of the other ones that you're going after. But, I mean, it's still a wonderful thing, even for the not top-end perks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can do this all with Ancient Invention, of course, time-worn components for Equilibrium 4, but if you want to, you can, you know, take it one step up, and I think there's going to be lots of questions from people about what the optimal set of perks is going to be, but consult your resident PVM expert, and perhaps we should do something on this next week when this comes out, so we can, you know, just have a definitive guide saying, hey, if you're at this level and you want a good set of perks, here you go. Go with something like that. That might be something
worth
doing.
That would be cool. Yeah.
You ready to move on to entrepreneurs?
Yeah, let's move on to entrepreneurs.
This one is 10% charge only, and this grants items for your player-owned farm and port, resetting your chime selling and contract limits at the Ark, and a coupon that can choose previous stock held by the traveling merchant in the deep-sea fishing hub. This also includes two animal name rerollers, two animal trait rerollers, and two animal gender changes, which are currently not in game.
Mm.
You know, that could be very, very powerful if you have a birth that goes wrong.
Could be.
You also get two captain rerolls and two crew rerolls and a voyage reroll token, as well as 10 port resource crates. Now, I'm wondering, are these going to be trade goods or actual resources? Because if they're trade goods, gone. That completely, you know, changes the math on this.
It would make it a little bit better, but it's probably not. There's no way. You know, I mean, the best part of this wish has to be the traveling merchant, I think, for anyone that hasn't gotten the live it out of the way.
Right. Because it allows you to go back and purchase the traveling merchant stock out of any day for the last 30 days, but you have to have not already purchased it. So if you want to go back and get a livid plant from 2 weeks ago, you can do that, but you have to already made the decision to not purchase it then.
Yep. So whatever doesn't go to my inventor's wish is probably going to go to the entrepreneur.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really good. Now, the port stuff,
you're probably close to being done with your port.
Oh, gosh, yeah. So I'm thinking, you know, maybe that is an Iron Man thing that, you know, maybe it's better.
Yeah, definitely. They did mention the Iron Man about the port stuff.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess that would, you know, that makes sense and everything. But decent. I mean, I think it's decent. Not as flashy as Inventors, but, you know.
Yeah, it's there. The writ of freelancing is the Ark contract reset, and the writ of barter is the Ark chime reset. And this one takes 10% charge each time you fire it off.
Yeah, that seems a little... I mean, I don't know. I guess if you're working through the Ark, it might be all right, but... Once again, it feels Iron Man-ish to me.
Yeah. Let's move on to Warriors. This one is PVM-based, 10% charge to activate it, and it grants items they say that help you fight for longer, take on more Soul Reaper contracts, and reduce the sting of death. You get an Aura Refresh, a Life Refresh, a Soul Reaper Refresh to refresh your Reaper tasks, and one item protection contract that gives you a free death.
Yeah.
So this is potentially, if you wanted to use it all here, that's 10 free deaths. And, you know, with how high death costs are, this is something PVMers will probably want.
Well, the nice thing about this, what I was thinking, is they said as long as you've logged in during, you know, the time to redeem or to get the wishes, you could use it any time. So I thought this actually might be good for the PVMers to hold on to for the next boss release. And voila, you don't have to worry about quite so much death cost.
But what can you do in 10 deaths at a boss? I mean,
I don't know. I mean, that sounds like a lot, isn't it? Is it not? I don't know.
All right. The next one is the Wrangler's Wish, which is for your player-owned farm. Any animals held in a player-owned farm pen of your choice instantly produce at least one baby or egg, and then a breeding cycle instantly completes, giving a chance at another.
I thought this sounded really good, but I'm not sure. Like, it has to be good if you were going for, like, a shiny something, right? Or if you're
absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. If you have your breeding pair ready to go and you're, you know, trying to, you know, get those last few dinosaurs, this could be wonderful because those things, you know, breed only every 3 or 4 days.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. So I can see this one being really beneficial for that. I personally don't think I'd spend it on this because I feel I wasn't, you know, shortchanged on the time and I could just wait for this going into the future.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's fair.
Yeah. And this is a 10% charge. So once again, low cost.
Mm-hmm.
Navigator's Wish, complete all of your active ports voyages instantly.
Man, I gotta say, this is the next to last week. I mean, it's the second to weakest, I think.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't feel like this one's that great. Maybe there's something that I don't see. Maybe it's because I finished ports so long ago. But it really doesn't feel like there's any bang for the buck here.
Yeah, and I mean, this is once again a question of time. If you missed out on this, I can see this being useful. Once again, I think this is a very Iron Man specific one. If you are locked out as an Iron Man, you could definitely make use of this one and the other ports one together to reroll voyages and, you know, just get more of the goods that you're going for.
That would make... Yeah, that makes sense.
We then have the Archaeologist Wish, which does the same thing except for active research. This one is 10% charge as well. And, you know, if you queue up a bunch of those 24-hour ones and you do that 10 times, that'd be a nice, healthy chunk of archaeology XP.
See, really? Because I thought this was, like, the worst out of all. It just really didn't seem... that big of a deal.
You know, I honestly feel like for me, the one that is probably the worst is the Entrepreneurs.
Really? Okay. That's interesting. It just seems like, especially with the archaeology one, the research, and even ports to a certain extent, that was something that you do and you come back and check it later. You know, like...
Right.
You set it and forget it. Like, I don't know.
But keep it in mind, you're approaching this from somebody who is not locked out. A locked out person might have a different opinion.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's fair.
Then we have Wanderers, which is another really potentially interesting one. Resets a daily, weekly, or monthly D&D. Outside the cap of the regular reset tokens that you have, the dailies cost 1% charge, the weeklies cost 5% charge, and the monthlies 20% charge.
This one just made sense to me. I'm like, of course. Like,
hundred sinkholes. Hundred extra sinkholes between now and the end of August.
You want 120, Shane?
I guess so. I'm not going to lie, that did cross my mind.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with a sinkhole. That's dungeoneering. I mean, that's straight up dungeoneering. But anyway.
Or you could get five rolls at the oyster.
But it makes sense, right? Because that's the kind of stuff that you do miss, that they did miss out on. Were those dailies, monthlies. Yep. Those are the things.
Remember we talked about that there should be some form of a daily included, mm-hmm. whether it be a lamp or something like this? And lo and behold, yep. here we are. But yeah, these are D&Ds, not challenges. Just keep that in mind.
Well, yeah, but they're all, but they are separate from the tokens and stuff too. True. So, you know, that's nice. But five cracks at the oyster.
Eh.
If I didn't have anything else to, if I didn't have anything else, dude, that's the only way I'm ever gonna get like something good. So I'm just gonna come out of that oyster. So, but yeah, I wouldn't pick this over like an Inventor's Wish or something like that.
Yeah, I definitely think Inventor's Wish is out there at the top if you are short on perked out weapons and whatnot.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I just need to go back to that and make a caveat that when it comes to dealing with these perks, you're dealing with things that are in the single digits of percentage boost for DPS. Between the old meta P6E4 and the new Aftershock Equilibrium 2.
Yeah, but I think this is more helpful for people that like don't have them.
Yeah.
To be,
yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, David said if you're contemplating between P6E4, like I have, or Aftershock Equilibrium 2. Sorry, that's what the E means. P precise. He said, you know, go for your bitings instead.
Because
it adds to the damage.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah. But the Wanderer's Wish is definitely on my list, I think. So. And finally, we have the Polymath's Wish. What does the name Polymath have to deal with this one? Grants you double XP for an hour on members' worlds or 20% on free-to-play. Normal DXP restrictions apply.
We're getting closer.
What was that?
Here. We're getting closer. Here it's week 2. Experiment. A-B test.
I wasn't going to mention that because I didn't want to do that 2 weeks in a row. But we'll talk about that in just a minute.
You damn well. Come on. If I knew it, you knew it.
This is potentially 10 hours of double XP.
Yeah. Which, that's for people who were locked out. If you were locked out, then this is a good makeup.
And you know, can't use it when double XP live is active, so you can't stack them.
Yeah, you can't stack them with this. I think they mentioned a knowledge bomb, too. So I'm like, wait, what? What's the knowledge bomb, huh?
Yeah. you will be, and this won't use the regular double XP counter. It'll just use a counter in your buff bar. You won't be able to pause it.
Yeah, yeah. But it's an hour at a time, so I think that's okay.
Yeah, and that's a nice bite-sized amount, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to go back to what you just said? Actually, no. Let me ask you first. Favorite wish?
I'm going to be using a lot of the Inventor's Wishes.
All right.
And then probably Entrepreneur's to make up and get as many plants as I can. Yeah, at least that's what I'm thinking right now. Yeah, that's probably what I'm going to do, yeah.
All right. I might go for an Inventor's Wish to get Biting 4. But the one that's really standing out to me is Wanderers for, you know, between now and the end of August, potentially 100 extra sinkholes a day. Or total.
Total, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Because, you know, I don't like Slayer, I really don't like Dungeoneering.
Yeah, well,
I know that breaks people's hearts, but that's the way it is.
Well, can't love everything.
So that's where I probably land on that. Okay, let's have that discussion. Let's have that discussion. 2 weeks in a row, potential things that could be monetized here. Keep in mind, this was a product of the Ninja team, not the Live Ops team, who is in charge of microtransactions and whatnot.
Yeah, so it's
not in the realm of the usual team who handles, you know, things like those kind of promotions like we saw last week with Mental Health Awareness Week. It's in an entirely different team here. But, you know, I can't help but say for a few of these, probably not the inventor's wish. And
no, last one.
Huh?
Last one.
I think for a few of them, aside from the polymath's wish, I could see a few dollar signs beside these at some point in the future.
Well, but yes, absolutely. But the polymath, especially, compare that to what that meditation stone.
Yeah.
It's an A/B test, right?
But people aren't paying for this. So this is just a question to see how many people would choose polymaths over inventors or entrepreneurs.
But this is the real thing. Like, this is a... It still feels like it would be a way to... But it's a dry run to see, like, does this charging system work? Can we tie it to double XP like that?
Is this, or can we tie it to D&Ds? Or ports? Or archaeology? Or PVM?
Yeah, so then we can
or
sell
any
some
dailies.
Yeah,
and the only one I'd really have a problem with would be the inventor's one, since that, you know, comes from actual items in game. But I think the rest of these would be fair game at some point to see in a store somewhere. I thought of that when seeing this. I wasn't going to mention it on the show, but you brought it up.
No, I'm sorry. And you know what's funny is, it just came to me. I was like, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, so it just kind of came out. See, we do it live, kind of. We record live.
Well, I think with that, perhaps maybe a little bit controversial based on the fact Tanis and I both had the same idea. I think with that, we can leave that there and let the players ruminate on that for a bit. But we're going to move on and talk about Reiniger's notes right now with Sirion. And then the big news of the week, the Battle of the Monolith. I went through this, and this is... And Sirion, you can tell me if you disagree with this assessment, but to me, this just looks like it's a series of four entries, and to me, it just looks like a rundown of everything that we have learned so far about Tony and the folks at the Archaeology Guild and what exactly is going on with the monolith since archaeology arrived.
It also seems that it kind of reveals the cards of sort of the different people that are involved, sort of perhaps verifying some speculations about who's who and who swears fealty to who, and like it, there's a lot of factions involved, and I think this sort of acts as a little reminder that all of these are at play, and probably sort of sets up the events soon to happen.
Yeah, so this is written from the perspective of Lottie Reiniger, the acting guildmaster when you start off the skill, who you go to for the archaeology tutorial. And one of the first characters mentioned in the first entry is Zaphos. And this was something you had to pay attention to before archaeology launched, but it turned out that Zaphos was this figure that came over to the Archaeology Guild when Tony was studying the monolith, handed him what turned out to be a chunk of blackstone, which in the entry they call it cursed shard. And when Tony used that on the monolith, he was, of course, sucked inside of it. So that's the first link that we have forged in the first entry here. And this was in the archaeology pre-launch. So if you know you were just paying attention to archaeology, you did the tutorial, you weren't around for pre-launch, you might not be aware of that. So that's something that is potentially going to be on the horizon going forward. Next, in the letter that Reiniger was writing to Tony, They say, "I'm angry that you left. I can't leave, Tony. No one leaves Silhouette." Then there's an asterisk beside that and further says, "And don't give me that. You must have known something was afoot in the guild." And this is the first we heard of Silhouette. Now, The next paragraph says that, like any good clandestine order, Silhouette keeps track of its members. Make sure you're towing the line, enacting Zarus's will from the shadows, and they'll hear the first word of dissent that passes your lips, hence sparking sparkling demeanor and perky grin. Now, first glance at this, you might think that Silhouette is the same organization that was pulling off the Inquisition, but based on what we know, that really doesn't make sense, does it?
No, I don't think so.
It makes sense. Because, first and foremost, let's just go into this, any good clandestine order. We know from, I think, we were talking about this in pre-show. Did you say it was the last piece of the Zarus collection that when you hand it over to the person there that they say that the Inquisition is part of the Praetorium Guard?
I don't know where that is being said, but yes.
That's
Sauron says that when you hand
right.
in the
I couldn't
last
remember her name.
Yeah.
And based on that, I think we can say that Silhouette and the Inquisition are not the same group. And what this effectively means is that you have two different factions behind the scenes that are working in addition to what we see on the surface at the Archaeology Guild, which we didn't anticipate going in, because this is the first we heard of Silhouette. Of course, we heard a lot about the Inquisition in Azanadra's quest from Sir Valance and Villainous, and spoilers going forward for the next 20 seconds. The Temple Knights link is revealed there as well in Azanadra's quest with the Inquisition. And it's not explicitly said, but I think during that quest, we pretty much confirmed that's what was being alluded to with the Temple Knights and the various forces operating behind the scenes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. On the second entry, it goes on, Reiniger says, "I've been studying the monolith since you left. You could spend a lifetime looking at this thing and barely scratch the surface, but one thing in particular sticks out to me. A series of strange glyphs, older than anything I've tried to decipher before and like nothing I've ever seen. And for this task, even our most venerable primers are a little more than dog-earned lantern stands, and more source material is needed," and the name Zaphos comes up again, speaking of going back to the early days before we infiltrated the guild. "He recruited me to help Nabonek build the temple, found a failing student and gave her purpose. He values my resourcefulness, but has never truly trusted me, so he keeps me where he can see me." So, is this a second guild infiltration happening here? Or was this just the Zarosians effectively laying the groundwork to take over the guild in what we saw at the end of Azanadra's quest and presumably what we're going to see on Monday?
I mean, Silhouette is definitely infiltrating the guild.
Yeah.
That's for sure. I don't know if the Inquisition is really infiltrating
the guild,
right?
From what I've...
It seems to me that the Inquisition is a much more ancient power.
Yeah, and perhaps more watchful, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
More watchful. Mm-hmm.
But it's also interesting how, you know, the Inquisition is sort of, you know, all about... I just had it open here. You know, they confiscate powerful magical items. So that's, I guess, hence the name, right?
Right.
So it seems interesting.
And the Inquisitor's staff.
Exactly. So it's interesting to compare that to like Silhouette, who is sort of like, it seems that the goal of Silhouette is to
investigate the monolith.
But Silhouette is like investigating the monolith, right? They're trying to figure out what's up. You know, you get the Blackstone being delivered by Xevos. You get Reiniger being super interested in these glyphs and the monolith. So it sounds to me that there's something happening there. And the fact that, she mentions somewhere, the Inquisitors catching up with them, you know, that it seems like they're sort of opposite.
And the Inquisitors are trying, in effect, and this was said in Writing in the Walls, the Inquisitors are, in effect, trying to gather these powerful objects when they appear to prevent them from falling in the hands of people that don't necessarily deserve them.
Exactly. And it sounds to me that maybe they believe Silhouette doesn't deserve.
And, you know, that would make sense. If the Inquisitors and the Inquisition was founded based upon the Temple Knights, but remember from our discussion with Ma Jack, the rank and file of the Temple Knights do not know about their behind-the-scenes allegiance to the Zaros side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the Inquisition also comes from the Praetorian Guard originally, right? So, I mean, and the Praetorian Guard is like the secret police. I mean, to me, it gets really complicated. There's now all these, on top of having this layer of all these god factions, the Zerosian faction seems to be shrouded in layers upon layers of new things. So,
and hidden organizations underneath.
Yeah, it's, to me, it's starting to all sort of jelly together in my mind. I find it hard to follow and keep.
We need like a big whiteboard showcasing everyone's allegiances with color boundaries and boxes about who's working with who and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it's super interesting, and at least in Clan Quest, I have seen pages upon pages upon pages of lore speculation and all that stuff. So, you know, there's clearly a group of people that are completely into this and trying to speculate.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to do this each and every week on the podcast. And I knew there was a reason we had to come back on Friday for this. But continuing on.
But my point is, I'm more of a fringe lore player, right? I like the overall story, but I'm not going to go digging into journals and books and get the nitty-gritty of the lore. And to me, it all starts spinning a bit, so That would be my criticism. It's all getting a bit too involved, and I really hope that we're going to get some answers soon,
right?
Just so we can reduce the cognitive load that I need to bring on any quest in this storyline.
Yeah, I mean, sure. There's of course a high level one that anybody who can follow, who just wants the basics, is there, as was in Azanaj's quest. But you can dig so much deeper. Continuing on from this, Xaphos continues to be mentioned. And one of the tasks that they wanted to do was organize an expedition to the Orthon dig site, because there's an artifact there that Zaros wanted. And based on where he was standing in that one yak track, it was outside of the Moksha ritual device. So I assume it's that ritual device at Moksha that lets you transfer consciousness between beings that he's interested in. Because could he be wanting to transfer his consciousness to like an actual corporeal being?
This is Zaros we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the whole strategy around Zaros seems to be around elder gods, so... Perhaps he is going to try and swap his conscience with one of the elder gods? Is that too much to
That might be a little bit too much, and you know that could be what was on the way with Orthon. But anyways, the second log concludes by Reiniger saying, "I'll send a couple more of our ruthless recruits along who'll make it look like I tried and whose deaths won't cost me too much sleep." and one another, someone I can trust to slip away quietly and return with what I'm looking for, if it's there at all. And of course, that's referring to us, the World Guardian.
Yes. Yes, there is another mention later on, I think. I'm trying to find it.
Third entry?
So, yeah, the third entry talks about the agent, and that agent has a very specific gender.
Okay, so that's not us then.
No.
No.
The running theory, I think, is that it is Lanikea. I mean, procuring stone tablets.
Right, and doing things around Anachronia, that would make sense. If it were her.
Was there some mini quest that we did around?
Yeah, it was helping Lanikea. It was at the start of the Anachronia thing in 2019. And they also they also mention us here, the rising star in the archaeology world, is helping to step up with the guildmaster duties.
I mean, that's us.
That is
sure.
Definitely us. All right, fair enough. And then Reininger says, "This is my chance to step aside and make myself scarce. I'll use my new free time to study these texts, joy and discovery, and all that." Then the final message, "I am struggling to comprehend what I've discovered. As for what happens next, I can't say. With the source tablets from Orthon, it was relatively straightforward to translate. Shadow, then another glyph. Existence, superlative. So shadow matter, shadow of all, shadow everywhere. Then it's stuck."
I mean, that's got to refer to shadow anima.
Yeah,
right?
A figurative phrase. Contextualized by conflict, antithesis, and negatively made manifest, or anathema, as we have said in, I believe it was Desperate Times that was alluded to.
Anathema? I would call it anathema.
Oh. Well, I mean, potato, potato, right? But this is indeed referring to shadow anima.
Yeah. It's starting to turn into the antimatter of Gilinor, right?
Yeah, yeah, and that's a theory we've had.
Or the dark matter, or the dark energy, or like one of those. Yeah, it's fascinating.
And they continue to say, "I couldn't help it. I spoke the word aloud, and as it came to me, the glyphs glowed brightly." And we know that the monolith, or the codex, reacts to shadow anima, because it is, of course, that when Guildmaster Tony used the black stone on it, based on shadow anima, that he was sucked inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that, of course, shadow anima is the thing that created Raksha with the
yep.
monolith as well. So this is, once again, recapping everything that we've known up to the point of Raksha so far. And then we got one of those very convenient 3* scene change markers. I love it when writers do that.
Mm-hmm.
And following from that, they say, "I came into a cold sweat, and now as my mind attempts to process what I saw or didn't, the memories are disappearing as quickly as I can put ink to paper. Lord Zaros is on his way. I know that now." And, I mean, this is, once again, things that we knew at this point. I think we're coming off of Azanadra's quest with this, right?
Yep.
"And the world must know what is coming, or it will be the end of everything. I could run, but I wouldn't get far. Better that I stay here and face my fate head on. See you again soon, Tony, one way or another." And this was released this week in preparation for next week's start of the Elder God Wars. So does this mean that Reininger's set to become gobbled up by the Codex?
No, I think Lottie Reininger has very apocalyptic ideas of what's going to happen if Zaros gets to that monolith.
Mm-hmm.
And if the world is going to end, then what's the point in running? I think that's what she's saying here, right?
Yeah.
I might as well just wait here, face what's coming, instead of trying to run away from inevitable destruction.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the stakes are being set incredibly high here. And while I think this lore being released like this is incredibly cool, it does itch me. And I wrote an informal article about this a while ago. It kind of bugs me how this is messing up the timeline as we sort of, as new updates come into the game and this lore alongside it, with like the actual in-game quests, right? A player playing all these quests and in 1 or 2 years from now is not going to get this all in the right order.
Yeah.
Like this lore, these notes.
Because these notes are just on the website. Right. They might not necessarily get put into game.
Yeah. But I guess that is, you know, we talked about this in the interview with Jack, and that's the direction they're going, right? Like, they're kind of focusing on, you know, making the quests all sort of follow along with the timeline, making sure that, you know, if you start playing the game now, you sort of get taken along with the story as it is now, and then you can go back and fill in the gaps if you want. But
and you know, I'm going to use the dreaded word here. I think the cadence between updates is definitely something that had been improved and kind of got thrown off of whack by the login lockout.
Yeah, sure. That's also, I don't have a problem with that, right? Like, I like the cadence of releases. It's just this mix of out of game lore and in game lore. It works if you're there on release. It stops working for anyone playing the content in the future.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe we need to release like a huge compendium, you know, how people used to go in the 1990s and buy box sets of VHS tapes for their favorite shows. Maybe we just need to release a compendium of, you know, the Elder God Wars on YouTube. You press play and you get a list of RSVMB update nibbles that talk about this thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to write that one down. I want to do that.
But it's cool. I think these notes strike the right amount of, you know, even for a relatively newbie lore follower like me, I can kind of figure out what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And it does a great job at building hype while also, you know, implying that there's so much deeper going on. And that's one of the most important things about storytelling, is the suspense of disbelief. It is the illusion, in a way, that all that we are seeing is just the surface of an actual three-dimensional world.
Yeah.
And I think these notes do a great job at, you know, the characters, or character in this case, clearly shows that the character knows more than we do as observers, and that's all you need to make this compelling.
Wouldn't you love to grab like Mod Jack or Mod Raven's head and see everything that's going on inside there and how this all fits together?
Yeah, but I'm going to lift a little bit of the curtain here as someone who plays D&D and prepares like world building as well.
You might make it up as you go along.
Yes, like half of the stuff you make up as you go along. That's, of course, less the case here, but I definitely think that the way that these quests come to be is that they might have a rough idea of how things work, right? And they probably have scattered notes about little lore tidbits that they came up with at some point, and they will refer to them. But I think a lot of this stuff, they are making up as they go and adding on as they go. Like, they probably have roughly know where this whole thing is going to end, but the details, they'll add them as needed. So, sure, we could pick their brains, but I think on half the... Well, they would of course say they can't answer it, because... Spoilers. But they... Half the stuff they probably can't answer, period, because they never thought of an answer for it. In a way, I think the players are further along figuring out what's going on than the actual developers of this.
Right. Right. And, you know, that's fine. And I think we've dithered enough on the research notes, and we can talk about what's actually right around the corner, and that is the Battle of the Monolith, the next chapter of the Elder God Wars. This was revealed today in a Friday live stream, and there was a very, very catchy little video showcasing RuneScape Elder God Wars appearing. Then on top of that, the monolith all swirling about with energy with some ominous music in the background. And as we head on into this in terms of who is at scene here, you can see Zaros appear, Azanadra, Saren, and Saradomin. A bunch of different factions all coming to play. And behind the scenes, you have Arianne, of course, holding the globe, as we've seen many times before in RuneScape archaeology lore. But let's dive right into this. We had the live stream this week with Mods Raven and Shrike, with Mod Huli hosting. They started off by giving a summary of Azanadra's quest. Are you looking forward to this? We got a fun little 4-week-long event starting on Monday that has the feelings of a world event, but they're very clear to say that it is not a world event in that it's not got that group process built towards it. It's in effect a 4-week-long protracted mini quest.
Yeah, it's super interesting. It's kind of a shame to me that it's not a world event, though I understand why, because they want to make this work for future players, of course,
yeah.
Right? So I kind of get that. I think it's cool. It's also interesting because it seems that the outcome is going to be player dependent on how they do, and I don't really know how they're going to solve that.
That was the sense that I got as well. And, you know, there was lots of discussion heading into the last two quests, Desperate Measures and Azanadra's quest, about how much influence the players would have. And the general sense that we got from all those is that the era of direct player involvement in terms of tipping the scales is gone.
Yeah, exactly. So this comes as a bit of a surprise, and I mean we're going to have to see on the, when the update comes out what this is exactly going to be. But you know, the implication seems to be that we will have no choice but to fight on the side of
the good guys,
Saren and Saradomin.
Yeah. Yeah,
the good guys. The thing is,
so-called good guys.
Half the people in chat wanted to fight on the Zaraosian side. And I think I have no idea how they're going to solve this, right? Like it's a head to head, right? It's a culmination of conflict. You can't really force the player to be on one side, I feel like that. Unless you have obvious big baddies that you're trying to fight off, right? Which most of the quests we do, arguably. You know, there's always the big baddie. There's no doubt about, you know, who we need to fight against and stop. But the antagonist here is much less clear. And I think there are still people that follow Zaos. Like, even Azanadra's quest was a bit, you know, awkward in a sense, right? Where you get tricked into helping Zaros achieving his goal.
Yeah, and we did have a question on that. Why does the World Guardian always get tricked?
And then in the end, you can say, "Oh yeah, but I would have done it anyway." And that's sort of I want to say cop out, which it's maybe a bit unfair.
And the whole reason people want to play along with these characters is because they have been given that agency in the past, and all these characters have super believable storylines that you could get behind what any of them stand for. You know, you talk to any lore expert and they'll be able to tell you what exactly Saren stands for, what Guthic stands for, and so on and so forth.
The whole idea with god emissaries was that you could choose a faction.
Right.
And you can choose to join the Zaros faction by talking to Sauron. You can parade your Zaros.
Which was eight flag. Years ago at this point.
You can parade around your Zarosian banner. And then have to fight the Zarosian forces.
But content shouldn't be held to something that came out 8 years ago.
I mean, shouldn't it?
I feel that's a whole other debate we could have on this.
Does that mean that... I'm going to take something that is dear to your heart here. Does that mean we can't ignore what happens in the next generation, Star Trek The Next Generation, in all the modern track? Because that's more than 8 years ago. Why would we hold ourselves to that?
He did that. Alex Kurtzman did that when he rebooted it.
Well, yes. And what response did he get for that?
You're right.
People care about this stuff. People You're care right. still about what happened in While Guffick Sleeps. How old is While Guffick Sleeps? Older than the God Banners.
Yeah.
And that's still... I mean, if Jagex was like, nah, it never happened. So, I don't know.
And they did also say that Desperate Measures was that clean break. Or sorry, not Desperate Measures. As in Aldrich's Quest was that clean break. No requirements going in. So there's that side of it, too. But anyways, with this event, the goal is to reutilize the battle mechanic wave defense mechanism from Desperate Measures.
I am sure everybody is cheering for this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, it was fun. And I'm glad that they are getting more use out of it because
I didn't find it fun.
It's kind of sad to build that for a single 5-minute sequence in a quest.
I didn't find that fun. Did you?
I didn't think it was awful, honestly. It was kind of fun, but I could see it being frustrating as well.
Yeah. Right?
It just didn't quite work as... it wasn't quite as smooth and quite as nice and quite as... quite as polished and... I mean, maybe they took some of that feedback and applied it. I'm not having my hopes up, but I think it's cool. I just hope it's not going to get old after 4 weeks.
Yeah, and it's going to be week by week. It's effectively there's going to be a new chapter each week. If you don't play it when it first launches, you'll be able to play them back to back to back. It's effectively going to take the form of an entire mini quest. If you play it during the event, you'll get an XP buff each week. And their aim is to put all the abilities of the person that you're taking control of will be able to be used. There's going to be some level adjusting. And they want it to be doable by pretty much anybody of any combat level. This could be an interesting experiment for PvP.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. That could be interesting, yeah.
Because, I mean, if everybody has different levels of equipment, why not just bring everyone down to some common denominator?
Yeah. I've always advocated for an approach like that.
Yeah, and that seems to be what's happening here. So it could work out very well with that, because I think the other option that if you were building this out initially, you could say, hey, let's just, make it a slogfest between the NPCs that are around on the ground and what the players have active, but at the same time, we want somebody who is level 40 to take this on, and tuning that to be the same difficulty as someone who is level 138 could be quite the task.
Yeah, exactly, and they tried it with some of the quests, but I don't think any quest got it right quite spot on.
No.
I think it's good, and I, I kind of like that it brings a level of strategy in the game. Right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a bit less about getting your four ticks and, hitting your prey of flicks and all that stuff. It is much more, exactly. it's much more about the bigger picture and, taking a second longer to make a decision doesn't really make a big impact on the fight. but you need to make these decisions overall over where to position people and what they do. And yeah, I think it's cool.
Yeah, I just hope it's not the biggest thing I remember the Desperate Measures one is it felt kind of clunky. So we'll have to see how this goes when we get our hands on it.
It's the name of the game at this point. So, but yeah, we'll have to see if they made some quality of life improvements there.
Yeah. When the event is completed, you'll receive a shard.
A black shard?
Maybe a black shard. You know, we also have the Shard of Zaros, the Shard of Ma that provide immunity in Elder God Wars 1 and God Wars 2. This could be something similar, I bet.
It's going to be the one for God Wars 3. It might be Seren's Shard then or something like that.
Yeah, something like that would make sense, I think. And maybe it could be made out of Blackstone. Who knows? Because if it was made out of Blackstone,
very interesting.
It would be only us, the World Guardian, who would be able to interact with that safely.
Yeah, is it not interesting how if it is Seren Shard, we have Zaros, Ma, and Seren, who are all very intimately connected.
Hmm. Okay, that would be one reason to have it be Seren Shard. That would make sense.
Very interesting.
I like that idea. Then they had some quick Q&A. Well, players who don't play it during the event miss out. The answer to that is no. After this, it will become a full-blown mini-quest. Now, as for what you need, specific level requirements for this, you don't need anything specific going in. But after this, after 4 weeks, you might want 75 Slayer, 74 Archaeology, and 74 Magic, and something to do with completing the Tzar quests.
Well, we have seen those show up before recently. And we know that the Tok'har are up to no good. Or maybe they are up to good. It's sort of probably a matter of perspective. But
once again, that matter of perspective is very crucial. And, you know, let's just, you know, cut to the chase here. These are the requirements for the next quest.
What I find quite interesting is how we are jumping from a clean cut to skill
very
requirements
high level
in the
requirements,
70s,
mm-hmm.
including the Tzar quests. So that makes me believe that maybe it's not the direct sequel to the Tzar quests. I wonder if this might just be a sequel to the Tzar quests. Oh, sorry, not a sequel to Asnadva's quest. I think this might be a standalone Tzar quest.
But would that make sense, given everything we've been talking about recently?
I mean, it will still tie into the Elder War, Gold
okay.
Wars.
Yeah, I guess they could do that.
Quest line, like
because
it might even still require Battle of Azanadra as a requirement, but I'm not sure if this is going to be the Elder God Wars Saga sequel because that
right.
is a massive skill requirement.
Yeah,
hike.
And this Battle of the Monolith is seen as the next chapter in Elder God Wars. So the question, that's a very good question, is do you jump directly onto the next thing with those high requirements? Or do you make this a sequel to the Tzar quests?
Like, for comparison, right? Desperate Measures, which is the second quest in after Cleanbreak as well,
50
had requirements
50 archaeology.
Of 50.
Yeah.
50 archaeology and 50 agility. Which is also not insignificant, but that does count as an intermediate quest, so...
Yeah.
And I think once you go into the 70s, it's not an intermediate quest.
No. No, it's not. That falls into
the... I think
that's
a master quest?
I think... Is it intermediate, experienced, master, or something to that effect? I don't exactly remember the correct order on that. But... is there anything else we want to talk about in terms of Battle of the Monolith? I mean, I think we got most of the key points that were on the stream. We can... bounce some ideas next in the couple of questions that we have, but
you're right. There is an experience difficulty.
based on this, it just sounds as though that this is going to be a big dust-up with Sarah Doman, Azenadra and Zaros.
Guthixians are expected to be part of it.
Oh, yeah, right. So and as the event goes on, new allies and enemies will appear.
Yeah, 4-week event involving Serenists, Semidomists, and Guthixians. So that's what we are starting with. So we'll have to see. I mean, it makes sense. Like, the Guthixians were sort of starting to stir. Who do you think the new allies and enemies are going to be? I wonder if the Zamorakians are going to show up.
Yeah, I mean...
That would get very interesting very quickly.
It would, especially given everything we learned at the source.
Because the Zamorakians are not going to be on Zara's side.
Nope.
But the Zamorakians are also not going to be on Sarah Doman's side, I feel. Not easily. Unless you get one of these sort of shaky truces. Yeah.
Which we know how that feels.
Yeah.
We know how that feels.
See, I have no idea who will show up. Like, the Serenists, Sarodomists, Guthixians, and Zarosians are definitely the big players of the current world stage.
Yeah. And overall, I think this is what people have been wanting to see, you know, just that next domino fall in the storyline series. It was very intentionally vague here. Based on the sounds of it, it's going to be the fight for who gets to control the Codex, I think, or the Monolith.
Yeah, and meantime, people will just be there sifting the soil.
Yeah, that's right. You ready to move on to your questions, or is there anything else we want to talk about on this? Because, I mean, we are going to get way deeper into this next week, but we got the very high-level details of what's going to be involved in this right now.
Nope.
All righty. We're going to move on to your listener questions in just a moment, but before we do that, I'll just thank our Patreon supporters for making this episode possible. Without you guys, you know, we wouldn't get to do half the fun stuff we do here. So this week I'd like to thank Andrew C, Arvids L, Brock H, Cameron, CGB900, Christian S, Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plocks, Danny C, Diana, Dream Delayed, Duramax, Gabrielle, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Keski, Kyle, Lucky Ducky, Nora, Parnassius, Rastafa, Ricky A, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Soupfinder, Stabive, The Bears OP, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, and Zat. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. And if you're wondering what all this is about, you can check it out on Patreon at patreon.com/rsbnb. For as little as $1 a month, you gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits. You get to vote in the monthly bits that you do, and you get to attend the RSBNB Update Roundtable. Lots of stuff for as little as $1 a month. For $3 a month, you'll get a special VIP rank in Discord and access to high-quality stereo versions of the podcast. And for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out each and every week on the podcast and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to build the clip show at the end of the year. And, of course, we are currently working up to our $200 goal, which is a Patreon mail out an exclusive postcard to all of those who support the podcast, and maybe some other fun little things with that too, but we'll wait and see as we approach that. And should we reach $500 a month, Tannis and myself, and maybe a couple others, I know Sierra, and you've already bowed out of this, we'll take the Hot Ones challenge. I know you don't want to do that, but maybe things will change by then. But nonetheless, thank you so much, everybody. Check it out at patreon.com/rsbnb. You just love how I'm trying to rope you into that, eh?
Mm-hmm.
We got two quick-fire questions here. First one from Sharshana of Clan Quest. Who will officially first die in this battle? Battle of the Monolith. I don't know if we're going to see any deaths. That's a very in-your-face kind of question.
I mean, I think the first person to officially die in this quest is going to be random Zerotian goon number 3486.
Do you think we could see the death of Reiniger?
I mean, she definitely seems to expect it herself. So could be. I don't think so, because it means that anyone doing this quest before finishing archaeology needs to have a stand-in character programmed in the game. So for practical reasons, I think they put a nice thick layer of plot armor on Lottie Reiniger.
Tony. I mean, there's a chance we'll be interacting with Tony as this involves the monolith. Presumably he's still somewhere. Maybe he has been transformed in some way. Maybe he'll die as well.
Yeah, could be. I think there was even some speculation that Tony and Raksha were related, because he has been affected by Shadow Anima.
Yeah.
So, I mean, who knows? Maybe he's not even alive anymore, or whatever.
Or alive in the way Tony. That we perceive it.
I mean, yeah, whatever was Tony is now no Tony anymore.
Yeah. And, I mean, my money is honestly on Reiniger, because, you know, we are now the guild master, and she seems, like you said, to expect that. But, I mean, they could find a way around that. It's entirely possible.
You know what I think would be really cool? Is you have Sarodomin being all his goody-good guy, but not being actually a goody-good guy.
Are you about to call for the death of a god?
Is he still a god, though? Like, after his crown was
taken,
he's
been severely weakened.
He's been severely weakened, right?
And I want to rope this into our next question from Diana. What's your wildest theory about this event?
All right,
because
well,
I think you're heading
then.
In that direction.
Yeah, there we go then. I think that, this might be more hope than thinking, right? But I definitely see Sarodomin being sort of thrown off his high pedestal, and I hope that he's going to get to a point where he realizes that doing the right thing sometimes comes with a big sacrifice, and perhaps takes the biggest sacrifice of all himself and solve this situation.
Yeah.
That's what I think that would be a great redemption arc for Sarodomin, because I think he kind of messed up for most people. But I don't think he's a bad guy. I think he's just a bit too arrogant to see that his actions have consequences.
Yeah, and that would go a long way to setting up, you know, my conclusion for this entire Elder God War storyline. My theory on this is that we're going to wind up in a godless world. The gods, as we know it, are either going to wind up dead or severely empowered. We've taken the first step with Sarodomin on that, but you know, I also see a world potentially where Zaros winds up, you know, defeated in a chunk of rock somewhere after he uses that Raksha device and transfers his consciousness into an elder god or something to that effect. And then Saren shatters herself and is no longer a presence on Gelenor. And, you know, we wind up in following this a godless world. I think that's the way, one potential way that this entire thing could end. Mm-hmm. And your theory on that with Sarodomin is pointing in that direction, because there would need to be a way to effectively depower some of these gods in that way.
Yeah, man. It's to me, it sounds like, maybe it's a bit meta that I'm looking at, but to me this sounds like a good character arc for Sarodomin, to sort of wrap that up and give him that that ending. Because, yeah, like, what else is he going to do at this point?
Yeah, it's
to
also...
me, I find it... What I find kind of interesting is that in the early RuneScape days, it was really... there were only really three gods, right? There was Order, which was Sarodomin. There was Chaos, which was Zamorak. And there was Balance, which was Guffix. That was the trifecta of gods, right? That's why there's a blue portal, a green portal, and a blue portal, a red portal, and a green portal at Castlewars, right? That was the thing. That was the whole stuff, and the other gods sort of got roped in over time. And it's interesting to see how now we have shifted to a new conflict, which is Saren versus Zaros. And I think what we are looking for is that third faction to balance it out.
Who's that going to be?
Could be the Godless faction, could be, something else, but I think that's what it's going to come down to.
All right, fair enough. And, you know, based on what was said in the live stream, Serenus, Gephthyxians, and, of course, the Zamorak people, or Zaros people as well, going to be involved in this, plus Ceridominus, I think is very clear that this is, you know, not necessarily going to be your typical fight, because based on what has been said here, you already got potentially five different factions. You got Azenadra's side, you got Zaros' side, you got the Saren side, the Ceridominus side, the Gothixian side, and then that doesn't even begin to account, like you said, what happens if Zamorak comes in, or what happens if the Godless come in.
Mm-hmm. I mean, by definition, this is already a god war now. We have gods fighting each other.
Yeah.
It's just that it's two factions, not four.
I also think it's going to be very unconventional. You know, people have this idea of God Wars being imprinted by God Wars 1 and God Wars 2. So following from that, you know, what we're about to see is the God Wars, like you said. That's a very good point. Very good point. And
like that, like the requirements we mentioned, maybe, yeah, I don't see that being the requirements for the actual dungeon yet. I think there's more chapters before they launch that. I think we're looking at a late autumn launch for the actual dungeon.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I was thinking more late summer, but we'll see on that.
Could be late summer as well, but definitely there's more story to be told first.
Yeah. But my wildest theory, like I said, is that this is setting us up for a godless world after everything peters out. And, you know, like we said, we probably wouldn't be surprised to see some major depowering happening in this first wave. And that is the general trend of things in this day and age, is to make things go really, really fast. What?
I'm laughing. Because a lot of fifth age quests only works because there can't be any gods on Gelenor.
Yeah.
Then all the sixth age quests only work because there can't be gods on Gelenor. And then the seventh age quests will only work because there can't be gods on Gelenor. So we have another tier of quests that is going to have a notification at the start that's saying, this quest took place in the past when gods still roamed the country freely and happily.
And then they became deported.
And then... yes.
Anyways, that's enough on that. We'll be back next week with the full rundown of this. Combat-wise, lore-wise, from all angles here, as you expected, RSB&B update. Our next question this week is from Sunset Fish, who says, hey, I'm 10 episodes behind on the pod. But I'll ask questions anyway, a simple one to start, as it has been a while. Do you have any RuneScape regrets? I mean, besides the farming cape, Shane. He says, I helped form a clan called Dunkin' Donuts shortly after official clans were made. I even gave them their name. I regret leaving shortly afterwards to start another clan, which I quickly abandoned too. Forming new clans was a hobby of mine back then.
Okay. You got regret, Shane?
Yeah, I got two, and it's going to make me sound like a complainer given some of my recent RNG. Back in the day, Mike and myself did the Calphite Queen, and he had a green party hat, and he sold it for PVM gear back in the day in 2005 for the both of us. And suffice to say, this was when dragon chains were around 60 mil a piece, and, you know, we thought we'd make that money back with a few chains here and there. That didn't happen. So I think that's a group regret that I say perhaps, you know, he shouldn't have sold his green party hat for that. But one other thing that I regret is that at the time, we dropped, you know, like three or four Easter eggs at a drop party one year. And they were like 500K each.
Wow. I'm guessing they're a lot more than that now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 534 mil right now.
Ooh.
Probably higher, given the fact it's one of those rares and it's not traded too often, but you might be able to find it on the GE for that.
Damn, Shane's just out there throwing those.
Yeah, we used to do that quite a bit, actually. Old-fashioned drop parties and the like. And like I say, I mean, it sounds weird coming from the fact that I've talked about my two recent spear tips recently, the blowpipe from the dinosaurs and so much more, the dye. It feels weird. You probably think it's weird to talk about these kind of things, but these are just kind of things that always that just kind of sit in the back of your mind, you know? So, that's what would come to mind for me. How about you?
I don't have any financial trading things like that. I don't really have anything like that. Regrets. No, I mean, not really. I mean,
and you know, it's a game. It's kind of hard to really. It's kind of hard to quantify it in that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can't say that I regret not being a better PVMer because, well, that is what it is, and I do what I do. Can't say that I regret not making friends because I made tons of friends.
Yeah, that's a very important part.
Lifelong friends.
I agree.
No, I have to say, I did it my way. All right?
And that's a very important reference because we'll be coming back to that, won't we?
We will.
But yeah, and I mean, if we're going to split things out like that, I think the fact that, you know, most of what I say is financial more than anything, really speaks to the fact that, for the vast majority of time out there, I have treated this like a game more than anything else. And as such, I don't feel that I missed out on too much in that regard. I mean, you could point to other things as well, like maybe, you know, not doing as much Darkscape as I should have done. Or, like you said, Jade, of, you know, not keeping that untrimmed farming cape around for a little while longer. There's those kind of little annoyances and whatnot that I think do come up. But overall, we're here because we want to use this as a form of relaxation, and we want that to be the same for our listeners. And I think the fact that everything that you, myself, and Jade, and everyone has listed is relatively small beans, I think that's a good thing at the end of the day.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's hard to regret things in a game that you love. And it makes sense for those to end up being like, man, I wish I had held on to that party hat or that Easter egg, you know, because yeah. that is what makes sense. And I don't really have any of those because, I mean, I don't go back far enough for that to ever, you know, I was here for Black Santa hats. I wasn't lucky enough to get one. You know, I was here for like the stuff that I was here for. Yeah. I just wasn't ever lucky enough to get one.
Yeah.
And the old stuff, I wasn't here.
Yeah.
So
I got my red for 400K. I think that was probably like September or October of 2004, honestly. Yeah. Damn. long time. All right, that's it for questions. Before we move on and start wrapping up the show, we do have a few achievements to go through as Double XP Live is going away, so we're going to kick that off. Let's go.
All right, well, it's a whole bunch of achievements. They've all been very busy this Double XP. How do you call it, even? It's not a week. It's like a month, right? At this point.
Yeah.
Anyway, Duradal got 99 summoning on May 20. Rune Dragon got 99 woodcutting on May 20. Zodiac Hyde got 120 Slayer on May 20. Now we're moving on to May 19. We got FE Superchair getting 99 runecrafting, 99 dungeoneering, 99 construction, and 99 agility all in one day. We have Isk getting 120 ranged, Jamandi 52 getting 120 smithing, Poitato getting 120 archaeology, Shunter Yustay 99 divination, Surge Aurora got 99 attack, Ultra Dog 177 got 99 defense, and Vivian got 99 construction, all on May 19. Then moving on to May 18, we have Dartmouth getting 120 Slayer, Duradel getting 99 Strength, Goku SSJ Blue, but with whatever,
French.
120 ranged, Jamanti 52 getting 120 Fletching, Vijora getting 99 Invention, Attack and Strength on May 18th, Surge Aurora got 99 Cooking, Tyker Arv got 120 Summoning, Updaron's 05 got 99 Fishing, and Vivian got 120 Invention. That was all on May 18th.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
All right. So we have one rib with 120 magic on May 17th. We have Almost Evil 2 with 99 Fletching on the 17th. We have Matt 258 with 120 construction on the 17th. Nice. We have Mahim with 99 fire making on the 16th. We have NI Nightmare with 120 Slayer on the 16th. Ooh, are you jealous, Shane?
No.
We also have NI Nightmare with 120 archaeology. Nice on the 16th. And a NI Nightmare with 120 farming on the 16th. Nice. And again with Herblore on the 16th. Good job there. Then moving on, we've got Rune Dragon with 99 Thieving on the 16th. We have Tadio 22 with 99 Defense on the 16th. We have Alusif with 99 Ranged on the 15th. We have Crazy Leg 722 with 99 Mining on the 15th. We have Crazy Leg 722 with 99 Herblore on the 15th. And we have Garden Chick with 120 Archaeology on the 15th. We have Gooey Cookie with 99 Thieving and Slayer both on May 15th. Nice job, everybody.
I agree. Nice job. Continuing on the 15th, we have Snow Light with 120 Herblore. Twisted Soul with 99 ranged. On the 14th, we have God Shaman with 99 ranged. Madhouse SC with 99 Hunter. Mahin with 99 Smithing. Nordic Falcon with also 99 Smithing. Todio 22 with 99 Herblore. Twisted Soul with 99 Slayer on the 14th. Zabros got 99 Dungeoneering. While Zodia Chide got 120 Attack. Jamandy 52 got 120 agility. Mahin got 99 cooking on the 13th. The Lion got 200 million crafting XP done on the 13th. And Todio 22 got 99 Slayer also on the 13th. Nicely done, everyone. Nice achievements all around. What have you been up to, Tanis?
Been doing well. I got my 120 Herblore. Been doing a little bit of archaeology. Picked up a spear tip.
Ooh, how long did that take?
Not all that long. maybe within 100 artifacts
from the sanctum. Not too bad, not too bad.
Yeah, so looking forward to making that. But right now I'm finishing up my double XP time doing archaeology.
Good. I wish I was doing the same thing, honestly.
It's still fun.
I know. Such a wonderful skill all these, you know, a year plus in. It's really, really hard to believe about that. So I'm glad. You're going to make that into a full tier 92 masterwork? Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm really excited about being able to make my own, you know, tier 92 equipment. I don't care it's melee. In fact, I'm glad that's my style. You know, punch me in the face, punch you in the face. Cool. Yeah, really excited about that.
Yeah, it's really a good weapon, and I think the whole masterwork paradigm is wonderful as well, because with the mining and smithing rework, we've been asking for that for so long, to have something where you'd be able to make high-tiered armor with your own skills in-game, and you know that has finally arrived. So that's wonderful, and I'm so glad that that's there. I really enjoy my trim masterwork spear as well, of annihilation, or just masterwork spear of annihilation, I guess. It's all perked out, and it helped during combat week, and also helped with Slayer during double XP as well, which is consequently what I've been up to this week. I got
nice.
I think 113 or 112, something like that. I don't even know what level I'm at anymore. That shows how much thought I've put into this. Just it's the same as last week. I just cannot get into this skill, despite everyone singing its praises. Yeah, it was 112.
Yeah, it's weird too. Think of it like, I mean, it's almost like it's farming, right? Like you go to a new place and you kill things.
Yeah,
you go back. You go to another new place.
I just haven't been able to find those special tasks. The things that I still have enjoyed the most have been the Chaos Giants and Vile Blooms.
Yeah, that makes
sense.
Dinosaurs
are okay as well.
Great. Yeah, they're great. If you want something that's like fun, that's like a little bit of a fight, but not really.
Ripper
make
Demons?
Sure you got. No, not Ripper Demons. Think pre-Ripper Demon. Try Nihils.
Oh, okay. I never enabled those.
Yeah, the last I knew, they were halfway decent money.
Remember, from our discussion earlier, I don't care about money.
Oh, well, that's true. But I think they're decent, though. I think it's a decent task. It used to be.
All right. And like I said, following from last week as well, it's very hard to get into the gemstone dragons as well. I don't know why.
Yeah, that one, that's a mystery, Shane. I don't get it. Like that's like the best Slayer XP, like in game.
Yeah. My current task is Aerith's, but I kind of put that on the back burner because I just decided to do some woodcutting in the interim. I might go back and do Slayer for the final bit of the last 20 or so hours I have.
There you go. Aerith's a good task.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. I remember them being good. So that's what I've been up to. All right, let's move on to our picks of the week. I'll go first because this is something that I think everybody's is going to have many pain points about going back ages and ages. I remember when we started this website and started this podcast, the new kid on the block was Firefox in terms of web browser. Back in the day in early 2005, Firefox was the new web browser coming in. Everybody at the time was moving away from Internet Explorer and Windows XP. We were wondering how long Windows XP was going to stick around until Vista and Windows 7 finally arrived and set Microsoft on a modern path. But throughout all that was one consistency in terms of Internet Explorer. And this was a browser that existed for so long on Windows computers that, you know, even with Windows 7, they brought out Internet Explorer 7, and they kept iterating Internet Explorer, even through the first versions of Windows 10 that came out, all the way to Internet Explorer 11, because there were just websites in the corporate world that were designed to work proprietarily with Internet Explorer. And as a result of that, many of these old portals were not built to take advantage of modern web standards. So as a result, they just kept Internet Explorer around and used it for these web portals, and people relied on it. And you can still access it in Windows 10, actually, right now. If you just type IE Explorer into the run dialog, your very old Internet Explorer will pop up, allowing you to access those websites if you need them. But Microsoft has announced that going forward in future versions of Windows 10, Internet Explorer 11 will be retired on June 15th, 2022. So it is finally being removed from Windows after 15 years in which it really stopped being acceptable to use this thing.
I guess that's one way to get rid of your browser history, huh, Bill?
Yeah. Right. You were thinking it might have had to do with something with that, or potentially joking about that. But believe it or not, that Microsoft 365 and other Microsoft Cloud apps still are actually going to support Internet Explorer until August 17th of this year. And in their blog post, they talk about a number of other reasons that it's time to move on, including improved compatibility, streamlined productivity, better browser security. I think we can all agree with that on Chrome. And just in general, better browser architecture. I remember back in the XP days, so much of the vulnerabilities that made their way into XP were by way of just the absurd capabilities built into Internet Explorer at that time. So, and they say the future of Internet Explorer on Windows 10 is Microsoft Edge, or as many has said, Microsoft looks for an edge into the future of browsers as they retire Internet Explorer.
Yeah, you know, Edge is younger and likes to have fun. Yeah, I mean, we had a good run, right?
Do you still use Edge for its accessibility?
Oh, yeah. Yep,
use it every day. And how it's baked into Windows? So, yeah, okay, that's good. Mm-hmm. All right.
And especially the new Edge where all the Chrome plugins work with
right.
it. That's been crucial when it comes to work and stuff. A lot of our stuff revolves around... we use a lot of Chrome plugins, so it's great for me.
It's almost like it's an entirely different Windows than it was a decade ago, and it's just been this gradual shift looking at that. And even I'll admit that. So, rest in peace, Internet Explorer. But anyways, what's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week goes back to 1973 and the soulful sounds of the king himself, Elvis Presley. I was thinking with all the wishes and all the choice we have, and then with the question about regrets, it made me think of a song. And Elvis did it best. I hope that's not blasphemy. It might be, but
I don't know why it would be.
I'm not sure if it was Sinatra that did it first, but it's called "I Did It My Way," and listen to it. It's about a person that's they're facing death, and they
Frank Sinatra did it their way. It in 1969 first.
Yes. Okay. There you go. So I thought it was earlier than that, though. Wow. Okay. So, that's only 4 years later. But, it's the king. I got to go with the king. And it's the fat king from Hawaii. So, I mean, he's all sweaty and he's just Elvising out, It's good. That's my pick of the week.
You're not going to believe what the Wikipedia page says for this.
What's that?
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
I got three things that are going to completely, well, two of them are going to, you know, make you question this pick of the week, maybe.
Okay.
Going back to 2005, surveys in the UK have often reported that My Way has been the song most frequently played at funeral services in the UK.
That makes sense. Okay.
It's also a very popular karaoke song, having been reported to cause numerous incidents of violence and homicides amongst drunkards at bars in the Philippines.
Okay. Oh, they're doing it their way, Shane.
And it was the song that was played over loudspeakers as Donald Trump boarded Air Force One for the last time on January 20th, 21st.
He did. He did it his way. Didn't like a single thing.
I bet you
That's
didn't
a
know
good
those.
Use of the song.
I bet you didn't know those three things about that, did you?
I did not. No, no. I mean, I guess it makes sense that it would be a funeral song, but yeah. drunken karaoke, Filipinos, just raising a ruckus, doing it their way. That's great.
Alrighty. Well, I think that's it for this episode of RSBNB Update. So thank you. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us for this episode. And of course, if you want to subscribe to us, you can find us in any number of podcast listeners out there. Just check us out at update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. And you're on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Cast, YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. Publish Nibbles there throughout the week, the highlights of the show. So give us a like and subscribe. It helps with discoverability. But with that being said, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.